This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic podcast produced by two or more African-Americans without a major network. And it is the godfather, Nate Milton, and I am joined by Marcus Vanderberg. No Big Nasty, he'll join us a little bit later on in the program, but
Unfortunately.
Oh, we gonna start it like that on Martin Luther King Jr. Day?
Yeah, might as well.
Oh, man. So, yeah, so how was your weekend, brother? I know last time we talked, you were headed out of town, and we didn't get to a show last week, so sorry about that, everybody. We'll tighten that up here. But how was your weekend, man?
I had a great weekend. I spent the weekend in Indianapolis as part of this. I'm part of this fellowship I'm doing, and we had a 3-day. I don't want to call it a workshop. It was a 1-day power session we did on Saturday. That I mean, we literally left the hotel at 8 o'clock and got back around 2 a.m. So it was a busy day, full of leadership stuff and stuff I can take back to work, but. One fun thing I got to do while in Indy was to attend the Pacers-Clippers game on Saturday night. And just so happened the Paul George dunk seemed to be the talking point of the weekend in terms of the NBA world. And it was quite the dunk. We all saw it coming because of the play, how it worked out in terms of the breakaway. But I wasn't expecting the Vince Carter 360 reverse slam. So that was a nice little treat there.
So is that even more exciting than seeing your name on WWE Raw?
Oh, yeah, that did happen last week. Yeah, so, I was at work watching Raw, as I do while I do my work. And I look over at the television, and I see them, you know, talking about the network, and I figured, all right, whatever. And I look over, and I see my name on the television screen. And I look to my right just to see if any of my coworkers happen to be looking at my television, just to be say, hey, look, is that really happening or am I tripping? And then one of the dudes across the way said, hey, you see that? And I was like, yeah. I did notice at first the spelling error. It wasn't until Jack Pistol sent the screen grab, thanks for that, Jack, that I noticed they were missing an R in the last name. But, you know, what can you do? But, yeah, that was kind of cool. And earlier that day, I got to spend some time with Wayne Gretzky, so it was kind of a great day to begin with. And then I got to work and saw that, so it wasn't a bad Monday.
Yeah, so as Mondays go, hanging out with Gretzky and getting the shout out on Raw, that's a pretty solid day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
How was your weekend?
My weekend was it was what it was. It was pretty boring, but at least it wasn't drama filled. So. I'll take a lazy, boring weekend over a drama-filled one any day.
By the way, this whole winter thing, you know, I've heard about it. It's been a while since I've experienced winter. When I left Los Angeles on, when did I leave? Thursday, it was 87 degrees, and I got to Indianapolis, and it was like 27 degrees. So this whole snow thing... What's this about? Because I was trying to wrap my head around this. I forgot why, you know, I left New York to begin with, and it's because of the weather.
See, Marcus, when the water from the oceans, when it condensates, mm-hmm. when it evaporates, it goes up into the sky, and mm-hmm. it forms ice crystals.
Hmm.
And then it comes down in places other than California.
Yeah. Yeah. That was. I think they had 5 inches on Saturday, so that was fun.
Like now you can understand why Peyton Manning had so many struggles in cold weather.
Man, I struggled going up the street. I can only imagine trying to play football.
Yeah, Peyton's like, see, Marcus, it's not that easy.
I don't blame you, Peyton.
So, but Peyton got a, I don't know if it's the last laugh, but he got a laugh on Sunday. The two conference championship games in the NFL, pretty much the, I mean, there was other things going on, basketball and hockey, but, you know, this is the time when NFL takes front and center stage, and the Broncos and the Pats were the first game of the day, and Peyton versus Brady, this was their, what was their, 18th meeting together?
15th.
15th meeting together, and Brady held the 10-5 advantage, and a lot of people were picking the Patriots to upset the home team Denver Broncos, but Peyton and those boys put it on them. 26-16 was the final, and it really wasn't even that close, Marcus.
It wasn't. I saw all of the first half of this game and then most of the fourth quarter, and I was surprised. I really thought that, I don't know if it's the Tom Brady allure or the Bill Belichick, whatever he has in his hoodie, but I really thought New England would come in here and give Denver a challenge, but that offense was pretty much stymied until the fourth quarter, and at that point it was far too late, and the Patriots defense had nothing for Peyton Manning. I mean, 400 yards in a playoff game is pretty impressive, and you know, you mentioned the weather earlier, but it was a nice day in Denver, as nice as you can get for January, so weather wasn't an issue for him, and he carved up the Patriots defense.
And I think this is a season that was pretty much set up for the Denver Broncos. You know, last year they got bounced by the Ravens, and the Ravens went on to win the Super Bowl, of course. You know, when you got Jacoby Jones, though, that's greatest player alive. So, but, you know, the Broncos weren't able to finish the deal last year. But this is the year where I think more so than ever, the AFC was wide open. You had a down Pittsburgh team. New England, even though they made it back to the conference championship, they weren't as strong. Brady had a lot of weapons missing. And then, you know, Indianapolis, you know, I think they're a team on the rise, but they're not in that category of the elite. We saw what happened with Rex Ryan and those Jets, so they weren't a threat. So I think if Peyton was going to have any success with the Broncos and make it back to the Super Bowl, this would have been the year. And, you know, I give New England credit. You know, I'm not a Belichick and Brady fan by any stretch. I respect what they've done. But, you know, those are two of the guys I probably hate the most in the world of sports. And Belichick continued to prove me right by coming out after the game and his big takeaway from this game, you know, this championship game that they lost, was Wes Welker was a dirty player. You know, Aqib Talib, you know, got injured. And I've seen the play, you know, replayed from a bunch of different angles. And it's like, I don't think it's a dirty play. Is it, you know, was it a particularly necessary play? I can't really say that. But, I don't think Wes Welker is that type of dude to go out there and want to intentionally hurt somebody, especially a guy that was his teammate, you know, 12 months ago.
True, but it's not like Aqib Talib is like exactly the model citizen in the NFL. So, you know, if there was someone that Wes Welker would probably take a shot or two at, it might be Talib, because, you know, he's not exactly Tim Tebow we're talking about here.
did you think it was dirty?
No. But then again, this is where football becomes one of those sports where I think you have to play to understand a lot of stuff that goes on, because I've never played football professionally, not professionally, but, you know, in rec leagues and stuff. So I think there's a lot of nuances and stuff that might happen in a game that I don't pick up on because I haven't really experienced the sport. And that might be one of those plays where, you know, someone who's played football might understand what exactly was going on in that play. But from what I saw, no, I didn't think it was dirty. I really can't tell you if it was called for or not, but we're not talking about a big dude here in Wes Welker. I mean, Wes Welker is 5'9", so it's not like he's Gronkowski coming out and taking out Talib, someone that size. So I just think it's Belichick needing one last send-off before his offseason.
Yeah, and I did play professionally for the Georgia Pecans back in 1988. And, you know, I see nothing wrong with what Wes Welker did. But, you know, the other thing is, you know, people forget that Wes Welker was one of the few Patriots that actually kind of stepped out of line, quote unquote, in terms of the Belichick way. You know, he would go out there, that he had the famous press conference where he was joking about Rex Ryan and defeat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he seemed to like to get enjoyment out of tweaking Belichick. So, you know, I think they probably tolerated each other when they were together with the Patriots. Because I don't, you know, you could see Tom Brady is a Belichick guy through and through. But I think Welker was kind of like that rebellious guy on the team to a certain extent. And, you know, if Bill's going to take shots at anybody on the Patriots, on the Broncos, it'd probably be Welker.
Yeah, and definitely. And you mentioned giving props to the Patriots. You know, I'm a Jets fan, so I'm not a big Patriots fan, obviously. But considering all the injuries and arrests they went through.
Shout out to D-Block.
Yeah, it's kind of remarkable they made it this far, considering they lost Shane Vereen for 11 weeks. They lost their tight end, who's now locked up. Well, they lost both tight ends. The other tight end, Gronkowski, got hurt again. They never had a solid wide receiver core. Amendola was often hurt. And they took a flyer on guys like Austin Colley and Aaron Dobson and guys, you know, Matthew Slater, guys you'd never imagined starting in the NFL and somehow made it work this far. So nothing to be ashamed of, Patriots fans, who's always next year.
Yeah, and, you know, that team is always – going to be in contention as long as you have those two at the helm. But getting back to Peyton, I mean, this is a guy that has had, you know, we've talked about it, you know, ad nauseum over the past couple months. You know, this is a guy that, as great as he has been in the regular season, only has one chip, you know, on his mantle, only has one ring to his name. And I think that we saw a Peyton Manning that, you know, the year was phenomenal, but the guy we've seen in the playoffs, I've been really impressed. I've seen, I don't want to say, you know, toughness necessarily, because Peyton Manning, you know, nobody can accuse him of being a soft player. But there's been another level, you know, of grittiness that we've seen. And, you know, I think this Peyton and this team, you know, they've got a legit shot, you know, to win the Super Bowl.
They do. And if they do win the Super Bowl, I think we have you're probably even the greatest season of a quarterback in football history. If you look at the numbers, he set. And if he delivers on the Super Bowl, I mean, it would be hard to find a better season for a quarterback than what Peyton did this year.
Yeah. And speaking of quarterbacks, let's flip over to the NFC side. You know, the AFC was a matchup between Brady and Manning, two of the best of all time. In the NFC, it was a matchup between Kaepernick and Wilson, you know, two of the young bucks, two of the young guns. And this game, like, this is – I know the announcers on Fox kept saying this is NFC football, and it was. It was a slugfest. It was low scoring for most of the game, and then, you know, you saw both teams kind of pull out the stops. There was some controversial calls that went towards the Seahawks' favor, but it's not like the 49ers didn't have a chance to win that game, and Seattle ended up pulling it out 23-17.
And this would be the game that I entirely missed. I booked my flight back to leave Indianapolis at 7:30 Eastern, not thinking that, hey, maybe this flight won't have televisions. And I did not see any of this game. I did not even tape the game. I didn't think about that either. So I was trying to follow the game on Twitter, which was a pretty interesting experiment to do if you don't have access to a television. And yeah, I mean, it sounded like the Bowman fumble or the Bowman injury slash fumble was a bit play. What was the play before halftime that people were upset about? That Harbaugh was upset about?
Oh, there was a defensive penalty.
Oh, okay.
Pass interference, but it was weird because there was a pass interference call, and I don't think it was a pass interference call. It was pass interference, but the call ended up giving the ball back to the 49ers anyway. You know, it was just Seattle didn't get the first down.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was, but the thing I liked about this game was, you know, you had two very different quarterbacks, Brady and Manning. In the AFC, we knew what they were going to do, you know, in terms of the precision and the pocket passing. Wilson and Kaepernick, man, you got two guys that don't throw a lot. You know, I think Wilson might have thrown 20 times during the game.
25
times, yeah. And, you know, so they do a lot of different things with the feet. They've got both of them had workhorse running backs with Frank Gore and Marshawn Lynch, who was stifled in the first half, but in the second half went beast mode again. And I think he's going to be a big key for Seattle, you know, going forward in the Super Bowl. But at the end of the day, you could talk about the calls. You could talk about the crowd noise and how, you know, it got a couple penalties for in the favor of the Seahawks. But I think it just came down to Russell Wilson executed better than Colin Kaepernick. And Cap, you know, had a silly interception that was underthrown. I think he was trying to hit Bolden, and he underthrew Bolden by like 3 yards, and that was picked off. And then, of course, everybody knows about the interception at the end of the game. I'm not going to say that was a bad pass, but, you know, throwing to a guy double covered, especially with the defensive backfield that Seattle has, I don't know if that was the smartest play. So I think Colin Kaepernick can go back and look at this game and say, okay, you know, we had a chance to win this game in spite of the penalties, you know, and we didn't do enough to get the job done.
Yeah, and, you know, this is Cap's second season as the starter. And I think we saw
it was a tale of two halves. Like, I think in the first half, he looked kind of like that guy that was, you know, new in the league. And you could see, like, okay, this is why this guy was backing up Alex Smith. Then in the second half, you know, when he was leading him down and getting you know, putting some drives together, you're like, this is why they invested in this kid. And, you know, it's going to take a while for him to have one of those complete games in the playoffs where you're like, okay, he's arrived. You know, I think he's a quality starter, but, you know, the thing that Russell Wilson has, I just think Kaepernick has it sometimes. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Cap, I think sometimes Cap lets the game get away from him. Whereas Russell, even though he's not throwing in high volume, I always have the sense with Russell Wilson that he's confident and the team believes in him and they know they're going to get it done.
Yeah, it's hard to get Russell rattled. I mean, it takes a lot to really get in his head and get him out of what he is comfortable in doing. And I've noticed the last couple weeks now that Kaepernick has leaned a little bit more towards running the ball in the playoffs compared to the regular season, where he was sort of, he always had the run option, but he was trying to, even if it was a check down, he was trying to pass the ball. So I don't know if it's a situation.
He's much more emotional, I think. He plays the game with more emotion than Russell.
Yeah, because, you know, he wears his hat backwards, so therefore he's conceited and only thinks about himself.
And the good thing is, though, when people are saying stuff about him, he can just put his headphones on and he can't hear.
Yeah, he can do that.
But spinning it forward, you know, we're going to get into our official Super Bowl preview next week. But just kind of your initial thoughts. We got Seattle and that Legion of Boom defense led by the outspoken Richard Sherman, who we will talk about. Don't think that we forgot about the post-game activities, but we'll get to that later. But you got Seattle taking on Denver with that prolific offense led by Peyton Manning. You know, what's your kind of initial impression of that game, Marcus?
Well, I'm glad these are the two teams that are in it. We're talking about the league's best offensive team compared to the league's best defensive team. I think it'll be a good game. If I had to lean a certain way at this moment, I would lean towards Seattle, and that's without knowing the weather conditions. I just have a feeling that in MetLife, in February, you're running the risk of having an evening where you're going to have conditions that favor a team that that runs that Seattle offense, where they, you know, try to pound and ground the ball, compared to Peyton Manning, who needs ideal conditions really to get that offense going. And we're talking about a good defense here too. So when you factor in the defense and the conditions, I'm leaning towards Seattle, but I'll give my, I guess, official prediction sometime next week on the show.
Yeah, and I see the points you're making, and I would tend to agree. But I think there's something to be said for experience. I think there's something to be said for having been there. And, you know, as great as Russell Wilson has been up to this point in his young career, Peyton Manning, I think, we're going to see a continuation of the Peyton Manning we saw this season. You know, a guy that knows he the sands in his hourglass are running out. And he's not, I don't think Peyton Manning is the type of dude to leave this on the table. Now, whether that translates into the team picking it up and overcoming Seattle's defense, that's yet to be seen. But just kind of giving my snapshot prediction right now, I favor the Broncos by like a touchdown. That'd be my pick.
Okay. The early AccuWeather forecast for Sunday, February 2nd. Rain and snow possible, a high of 36, a low of 24. So, but that's still 13 days away, so.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference between playing in, like, if there's no, if there are no, there's no precipitation, Marcus. You know, I think that's a big difference than, you know, just being cold. Because I think this season we've seen, you know, Peyton can play in the cold. Denver's not, you know, Denver's not L.A.
Yeah.
So I think it's a matter of, you know, whether the precipitation, because that's what messes up the precision of his passing game. But if it's just cold, then I think, you know, I don't think that's going to hinder Peyton or those Broncos too much. I mean, it's not like it's Indianapolis cold.
No. Oh, man. That... The that Friday during the day, the wind chill was hovering around zero. I didn't go outside except for dinner. I was like, no, I mean, why? What's the point?
I was just going to ask you, like, have you thawed out yet?
Yeah, I've thawed out by now. It actually wasn't too bad yesterday on Sunday. It was probably in the low 30s maybe if you stood in the sun. But I have to go back in 6 weeks. So I'm hoping for warmer weather. Some springtime weather in Indy, please.
At least pack some extra clothes.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. Like, I forgot my hat. I had a scarf, but you know, I'm buying my winter clothes from H&M. They're not really built for keeping warm.
This is Cat Williams. He's like, when you go to some place in the Midwest, you got to buy your cold clothes from there.
Yeah, you're not from H&M, so.
So get ready for that in 6 weeks, Marcus. But I was saying, you know, hopefully you thought out, because if not, I have a feeling things might get a little bit heated, because we bring in the heat magnet back on in the next segment. Brother Alfred Cunningham will be joining us, and we're going to get into this Richard Sherman thing, or Sherman Gate, as Twitter has given it the moniker. So, we're going to get into this, Marcus.
Yeah, we are, and this has been a discussion that's been going on since last night, because Alfred is controlling our Facebook page for some reason, which should be another conversation we need to have.
The inmates have taken over the asylum, I guess.
No, the inmate. We're better than that, Nate.
So, if you don't want to hear a spirited discussion, then just put on your headphones like Colin Kaepernick and ignore the next 15 minutes. But we're going to get into this Richard Sherman deal with Big Nasty, with Marcus, and with myself. So stick and stay. More Kings of Sport right after this. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody. Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at KOS_POD. That's CosPod on Twitter. Let's go.
With a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're gonna get. Don't you ever talk about me.
It was talking about you.
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or I'm going to shut it for you real quick. L.O.B.
All right, before... And Joe, back over to you.
All right, well, we saw what Richard Sherman did at the end of that play.
Oh, Sherman, Sherman, Sherman.
Shut up. And we are back on the Kings of Sport. Happy MLK Day, everybody. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate a man who stood for peace and unity and togetherness and to get back into this Richard Sherman deal. Of course, we talked about it. We touched on it briefly in segment one and in the A block. And, you know, this was all Twitter was talking about for the past 24 hours, guys. You know, Richard Sherman came out, cut that WWE style promo on Aaron Andrews, and you know the firestorm, the memes, the debate that has been sparked from this has been crazy, and of course you know we got to talk about it. So, brother Marcus, why don't you go ahead and kick off the conversation about, you know, just kind of this temper from the teapot, I guess, if you will, that has kind of come from that Richard Sherman interview.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, as I mentioned in the A block, I didn't watch this thing live. I was flying back from Indianapolis when this happened, but just to see the reaction and the debate that sparked on Twitter was interesting to watch from the airplane. And of course, you know, the easy way out is to just go after Sherman for being this loud, brash, and according to some people, uneducated black man, but you know that's pretty much the opposite here. We're talking about a guy who graduated from Stanford, who's probably smarter than half the people who were commenting on him last night on Twitter. And you know, since the incident has happened, he wrote a column for SI's football site that he's been doing for every week of the season now, and the column this week was focused on sort of what happened last night. And you know, he sort of explained why he was so upset at Crabtree and how he, you know, went up to him and said good game and Crabtree shoved him in the face. And I guess in the past, some incident in Arizona, Crabtree had said something to Richard Sherman that upset him. So there's this whole backstory to what happened last night. And, you know, you mentioned it's Martin Luther King Day, and it's kind of sad that we're still dealing with conversations like this where we're being forced to, or some people are being forced to defend Richard Sherman's actions just because, you know, people don't seem to really understand where he's coming from.
I was just going to say, it is very unfortunate that this discussion has turned again into a racial debacle with a lot of fingers pointed toward Richard Sherman. And if you've read the tweets, there are just a lot of ugly tweets out there. Some from disgruntled 49er fans, some from legitimate racists who did not like what Richard Sherman did and are using his blackness against him for really no reason. And when it comes to race, I'm asking a different question, and it pertains to Aaron Andrews. And I said this to much controversy on the Facebook wall yesterday. I have to ask myself, is Aaron Andrews afraid of black people? Because this is not the first time where a headline has involved Aaron Andrews, who is a sideline reporter and a journalist and somebody who really should not be part of a story like this. We had the incident with 50 Cent and Aaron Andrews to where she ran away from him, and then now this incident to where she's become very defensive, and the story is, oh, Aaron Andrews is afraid, which I don't think should be part of the story. So, again, it's very unfortunate the multiple racial turns that this has taken, but one of the takeaways it is for me, because I know Richard Sherman is educated, and I'm not even paying attention to that stuff, is really Aaron Andrews and how she just lacks talent and shouldn't have been the one to interview Richard Sherman in that moment.
Well, wait, who decided that she was afraid of Richard Sherman?
Oh, that is an interview, and you know, who decided is Fox itself, is that if you watch the interview, Aaron Andrews really was going to soldier on, but somebody cut the cord and obviously said, you know, get her out of there and had the quote-unquote save her. And then when they went to the post-game podium with Michael Strahan and the Fox Sports guys were talking to Richard Sherman, Michael Strahan himself said, yeah, I think you scared Aaron Andrews, so now let us ask you the questions that she should answer. Now, he didn't say ask her, but he did say that she was scared, and they had to pretty much pick up where she left off. And that, I think, is an indictment on Aaron Andrews, who, in so many ways, something really bad happened to Aaron Andrews. We're not getting into that. But she turned that negative and turned it into a positive. She was on Oprah, for God's sakes, on Dancing with the Stars. Somebody who you would think with that publicity, if she had talent, would be able to parlay that into at least a daytime TV show, a talk show, a primetime talk show. But I think you see in the fact that she's now with Fox Sports, ESPN reportedly just let her walk, that she really didn't have the talent to carry something like that. And I think that showed itself in the Richard Sherman moment.
That's funny. I don't get where during that interview where I saw Aaron Andrews was shook or scared. I mean, I don't understand. What did you expect her to say in those two questions that she asked Richard Sherman? I mean,
I expected her to be a pro and extend the moment. It's like
she tried to extend the moment. She asked the follow up question, and then the producers cut away. So I mean, I don't.
Yeah, but why do you think the producers cut away?
I'm sure
they took the job.
No, I'm sure they cut away because they didn't want to run the risk of Richard Sherman saying a swear word on television. It was the producers.
I don't think that was it. I really don't think that was it at all, because the only thing I noticed, it was palpable how awkward that moment was, and I could only focus on Aaron Andrews' reaction, and it was palpable how afraid she was in that moment. I think they were trying to scare her, because the exact scenario played out with Sal Palantonio and Bart Scott. Bart Scott could have said a cuss word. It looked like he was getting ready to get fired up. But Sal Palantonio handled that like a pro. He had this smile on his face, not a condescending smile, but a smile as if to say he's sympathetic to the situation and he's happy for Bart Scott. And he asked the appropriate follow-up questions that gave us the can't wait comment. And Aaron Andrews, what she said, who was talking about you? She seemed like she was on the defensive and it seemed like it was degenerating. I think they cut that moment in order to be merciful toward Aaron Andrews. And I know for a fact that I'm not in the minority on that.
See, I think that you got two things here. You talk about the question of, was she afraid of Richard Sherman? I don't know. You know, I can't give you a yes or no on that. But then you also talk about in terms of the duties of a sideline reporter. And first of all, Fox, I think they went too far with that. You had Pam Oliver. You had Aaron Andrews. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't Tony Siragusa there?
I didn't see the game, so I don't know.
Well, you got
I believe he was.
Yeah, so you got three sideline reporters there, and I understand everybody got to get their check, everybody got to eat. But what is that? What is the purpose? You know, what information did I glean from those three individuals? And I like Pam Oliver. I think she does a good job. But what information did I glean from them that I didn't know beforehand, or that Troy Aikman couldn't tell me, or that Joe Buck couldn't tell me, or that any of the guys, Terry or Jimmy or Michael Strahan, couldn't have told me before, after, or at halftime? You know, so that's another thing. And Aaron Andrews, you know, God bless her. She's making her paper. You know, I'm not mad at you. But I think there are much more qualified sideline reporters. And it's not just a male, female thing, or black, white thing, because I think Leslie Visser is a hell of a sideline reporter. I think Michelle Tafoya, hell of a sideline reporter. I think Michelle Beadle, you know, as controversial as she can be sometimes, I think Michelle Beadle is a much more competent broadcaster than Aaron Andrews, you know. So I think, I don't know if she's
scared necessarily. Let me just say real quick.
I think the moment is too big.
Right, and let me just kind of just really quick, I really don't think it's necessary to compare a female broadcaster, because I don't look at this as a female broadcaster. I look at her as a sideline reporter, and I'm comparing her to other sideline reporters and what the standard is. And it's obvious that there are competent male and female. I don't think this should even be a part of the discussion, but I absolutely understand what you're saying.
So you're saying, what, you don't want sideline reporters now? I don't understand.
I think sideline reporters are pretty much, you know, for the most part, a lot of them are useless. They're superfluous. They don't add to the enjoyment of the game. They don't really add any information. There's some of them out there that hustle, that are go-getters. You know, one of my favorite sideline reporters of all time was Armand Tate. And Armand was a go-getter. You could tell he was out there doing his job, you know, working the sidelines, giving me information that would add to the broadcast. But a lot of these people are not. You know, a lot of these people are telling me stuff that I can learn, you know, just by watching and observing and looking at the TV screen.
Okay, that's a fair point.
You know, I think Aaron Andrews is a great media personality. She you know, like Alfred said, she turned that tragedy into that bad situation in her life into something that, you know, was a boost to her career. And, you know, I don't begrudge you that at all. But I do think that in that situation, you know, the best she could come up with was, who was talking about you? You know, it's just like, I'm not even condemning her. It was just a funny thing to me. Like, she kind of went out of broadcaster mode and just turned into a regular person right there. She's like, who was talking about you, Richard? When he clearly was insinuating that it was Crabtree and the 49ers.
Yeah, just going back to this whole Facebook post from yesterday that I you know, personally, I was not behind, because I felt like it came off as you were being a bit sexist in terms of, and the part that really, I mean, the whole race thing, whatever, I know one of our readers brought it up, but, you know, it is what it is. But the whole line about, I mean, you mentioned Sal Powell being a pro. I mean, I'm not a big Aaron Andrews fan, but to say she's not a pro, a professional, I mean, she clearly got in a spot, whether you agree with how she got there or not, she's clearly in a spot where, to discredit her work based on the way Richard Sherman was acting just seemed like it was sort of short-sighted, and I thought, you know, borderline sexist.
Okay, well, I obviously disagree, and shout out to Robbie Davis, who is a childhood friend of mine. We don't agree what time of day it is, but he invited me to a fantasy football league, and I did win my seventh championship there, so shout out to you, Robbie. And as far as the Aaron Andrews situation, when I say pro, I mean just somebody who's good at their job. When I say pro, that's why it's slanged up. I'm not saying Aaron Andrews is not professional. It does kind of tie into the fact that she wasn't prepared for a live moment, and she's a live television reporter. That does tie into the fact that she's not really being that professional. But you can argue semantics as to whether she's a professional or whether she's just not good at her job. I just am basically saying she's not very good at her job. And somebody like me and Gene Okerlund, somebody like Sal Paolo Antonio, who are also sideline reporters, not male or female. To me, they're sideline reporters, okay? And they are people who I think handle situations on live television better than Aaron Andrews did in that moment. Not because she's a woman. It doesn't matter to me. I don't see gender. I could care less about gender. Because she's a sideline reporter who did not do her job correctly in that moment, which is why the Fox Sports crew had to follow up with the questions that she should have asked. And that, to me, came off as unprofessional, because she was not being a professional and doing her due diligence. She actually became part of the story, which is even more unprofessional. I want to talk about Richard Sherman. I don't want to talk about how,
Richard Sherman was the story. It wasn't Aaron Andrews who was the story. You're trying to make Aaron Andrews' story when Richard Sherman...
Richard's story. If you Google Richard Sherman, it will not be too many words after the headline that Richard Sherman stares Aaron Andrews. Richard Sherman's an Aaron Andrews awkward moment. She is just as much... Try reading a Richard Sherman story and show me where it does not talk about Aaron Andrews. And then fine, well, whatever, then I was wrong.
And I guess those other people are not scared black people, so therefore it made some dead at their jobs, correct?
The other people are, I'm sorry?
I guess those other people you mentioned aren't afraid of black people, so they made some dead at their jobs, correct?
I'm not even asking those questions. I'm asking specifically about Aaron Andrews based on what I saw from her. Is she afraid of black people? And I have the right to ask that question, because I will fully admit that I don't know anything about Aaron Andrews and her personal life and her purpose or whatever. But what I've seen, what's really been played out, is that, wow, she's really developing a pattern for when she gets defensive, when she's in her natural state, in crisis. She sure does seem to recoil, and oh, look, there's 50 Cent that one time, and oh, look, there's Richard Sherman that one time. It's kind of developing into a pattern.
50 Cent damn near... Wait, if you're comparing the 50 Cent thing, 50 Cent damn near went up to Aaron Andrews and nearly made out with her, and got right in her face.
Go ahead.
No, I just don't see how you can compare the two. We're talking about one was following a game situation, and the other one was, what the fuck was 50 Cent even doing there, going around following Aaron Andrews?
Okay, I'm comparing the two because both moments showed Aaron Andrews caught off guard. And when you're caught off guard, your real personality comes out. Well, if you're a defensive person like me and I'm caught off guard, I'm going to get defensive and I'm going to argue with you. If you're aggressive like me, that's what I'm going to do. If you're passive, you're going to go passive and go into a shell. If you're like Aaron Andrews and you're caught off guard, they gave him 50 Cent. Her 50 Cent are business partners, okay? So I'm not saying that she's racist or anything. Her 50 Cent, 50 Cent bumps SK Energy, he owns the company, and she is a spokesperson, or at least was at the time, a spokesperson for that company.
But you just used 50 Cent as an example about her being afraid of black people, and now you're saying, oh, they're business partners, so therefore...
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly, they're business partners, so when there's money involved, if you think that you have to like African-Americans to make money off of them, then you are in a different world
Listen, if she didn't like black people, she wouldn't be doing this business. She'd be in a different profession.
I'm not saying she does not like black people.
If she was afraid... If she was afraid of black people, she wouldn't be working in the sports business, period. She wouldn't be doing
it. I'm implying that maybe she doesn't know, but she is, and it comes off like that, so maybe she shouldn't be working in the sports business. Because next time there's a bunch of aggressive black males in the field and you need an interview, are you really going to want Aaron Andrews to do it? And if the answer is no, you should get somebody else, and she should not be there. And with the 50-cent thing, it's not like he tried to put his tongue in her mouth. It looked to me like she was going in for a kiss and she was like, hey, remember me? We're proper brothers. Remember, we did this company together. He's going for the kiss and she caught her off guard, and her reaction was to just start marching away. And he thought he was still doing the interview, so he was walking with her. It wasn't like he was running after her, like, come here, bitch, it's King Kong, come here, let's go to the Empire State Building. He was just walking after Andrews, and she was clearly running for her life because she was scared, and that was her defense mechanism. And I'm sure it's something that just clicked in her mind to do. I'm not saying that she consciously is disliked 50 Cent. I'm sure she likes him, and they do good business together.
The thing is, you know, correlation does not imply causation. And I think, you know, there are two examples right there of her kind of, I wouldn't say cracking, but not stepping up under pressure. And those two incidents have to do with aggressive, quote-unquote, black men. But I wouldn't say that that necessarily means anything. I think if it was, you know, if she was talking to Wes Welker and Wes Welker started getting rowdy, she'd probably shrink in the moment, because going back to the original statement that I was talking about, you know, I don't think that she is a credible sideline reporter. And that's just my opinion of her, you know, as a viewer and also as somebody, you know, who's done sideline reporting. I just don't think she's credible in those high pressure moments.
You know, I never disagree with that part. I'm not an Aaron Andrews fan of her work and stuff, but I just I feel the whole idea that she is afraid of black people is just silly and lazy, and just the discussion we shouldn't be having today. We should be discussing Richard Sherman and what we originally got on this topic to discuss, but now it's just, you know, spiraled into this mess. But whatever.
I'll also say, though, the other thing that's kind of been, and again, Twitter has run, you know, wild with this story. 49ers fans, shut up. Like, I don't want to hear 49ers fans complaining about bad sportsmanship, just like I don't want to hear Patriots fans complaining about bad calls. When your coach is one of the yappiest dudes in the league, when your quarterback is out there, you know, saying, we saw in the Carolina game, disrespecting the opposing quarterback. When you got a team full of chesty dudes and you get a team that beats you and they get chesty about it, you can't cry, you know, because you were having a good time laughing when Kaepernick was making fun of Cam Newton. But now that the shoe was on the other foot and, you know, Sherman is calling Crabtree mediocre, now you want to get upset and irate about it.
Well, no, you have a right to be upset if your injured linebacker is eating food and items thrown at him. Yeah, you have a right to be upset at Seattle fans. I mean, come on.
But getting mad at Seattle fans for that, and I agree with that, you know, that's Bush League. But, you know, the fans that are getting mad at Richard Sherman for what he said, and he's like, oh, he's so classless, and I'm so appalled. This has no right in the league. When your coach, after every penalty or perceived penalty, there's a sprint and a full somersault down the sidelines. Like, come on.
Well, I mean, that's been all of football except for Seattle fans. I mean, for the most part.
I just think you're always going to find those bottom five fans, and they're always going to be the ones who make the headlines on Twitter and represent everybody else. In the case of San Francisco, I think it's more true to the entire fan base, because I grew up in Northern California, and I have very little nice to say about San Francisco 49ers fans, but that's another conversation for another day. But I agree with you, Nate. The San Francisco 49ers fanatic base is the last fanatic base, I think, that should be associated with this, but it just goes back to the discussion of being a fan, which I completely dissociated myself with. I'm not a fan of the Green Bay Packers. They're my favorite football team. I love Aaron Rodgers. I love the Packers. I'm just a fan. Because fanaticism, you get into these little bubbles, you're myopic, you don't see the forest for the trees, and you don't understand the self-realization that even though you're complaining about maybe Richard Sherman being a little too brash, the San Francisco 49ers, led by Jim Harbaugh, which I really think is more of the face of that franchise than Colin Kaepernick is, that is the most brash coach I think that there's ever been in the NFL.
He's like Buddy Ryan, except he wins in the playoffs. So.
Boom!
That's a good place to bring it back together. So, We're going to get rid of Brother Alfred. Like you on a timeout for the rest of the show, man.
Got to get back on the boat.
Don't you even talk about me, Alfred. for the rest of the show. And hopefully we can come together and little black athletes and little white reporters and little white athletes and little black reporters can all join hands in the spirit of brotherhood on this day. That's what it's all about.
Call me on.
I don't think she's going to call you. And it doesn't even have to do with you being black. I think she's gonna read that Facebook post and be like, she's gonna say, I can see what the folks up at Stanford were talking about. Boom. And on the speaking of Stanford, coming up next, Brother Marcus and I will proceed on and talk about the Royal Rumble. We'll talk about maybe some new additions to TNA. And, you know, we got to talk about the man called Sting. The Sting of Sting. We got more Kings of Sports right after the break.
And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
We are back on the Kings of Sport, and I don't know about you, Marcus, but that last segment felt like a rumble interview. And since we are the Kings, it was like a royal rumble.
I see what you did there.
Hey, I had to think of something. Had to think of something. So
yeah, and someone's been eliminated, as you can tell.
Yeah, Big Nasty has been thrown over the top rope, and he's going backstage to give his interview with Renee Young. So hopefully he behaves.
Watch out, Renee. He's black.
are we have to call Norm?
No.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, back to the world of the WWE and the Royal Rumble, which is this Sunday, available on pay-per-view or nefarious means. A lot of things have gone down. I think maybe the biggest news of the past week, Marcus, at least in my opinion, has to be the Daniel Bryan concussion. Because I think the angle that we got on Raw last week, I think that was a reaction to fan outcry. And unfortunately, right when they started to do something right with Bryan, you know, he got the concussion, and there's a good chance that he won't be the Rumble or, you know, participating in a match at the Rumble at all.
Yeah, it's really bad timing that did happen during that match, and it's sort of, gladly, he wasn't booked in the match yet, so they can have an out, they need to pull him out, but, you know, it won't hurt him unless he was scheduled to win the Rumble, which I don't think he was personally, so I think they can pick up where they left off whenever he's healthy and ready to go. But you mentioned that into Raw last week, I mean that was up there in terms of, you know, closing moments. Gotta be top 10 in Raw history in terms of just how over he was with the crowd. And I think a lot of it had to do, you can thank Michigan State for it. They had that yes chant the previous week, and WWE, I'll give them credit, they do pay attention to how they're covered in mainstream audiences and sporting events, and they pick up on that stuff, and I'm sure they realized, hey, look, we can't keep having this guy as a heel when we have 17,000 college fans doing the yes chant. Why not, you know, capitalize off this? So they made the switch, and he's now, you know, back to, you know, same old Daniel Bryan. So hopefully it gets better soon. The concussion thing is a little worrisome because we see Dolph Ziggler, who's had two in a short amount of time, that these are happening more and more in the ring. Or I should say they're being actually diagnosed more and more, because I'm sure they were happening back in the day, but now they're actually getting recognized and guys getting time off. So best of luck to Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, well, real quick, before we actually get into the Rumble match itself, with Daniel Bryan, you know, there's been reports that, you know, the match that was going to be at the Rumble would have been, if he wasn't in the actual Rumble match, would have been him and Bray Wyatt. Obviously, I think they did a good enough job last week. You know, that could have been the end right there to his interaction with the Wyatts. But you talk about the risk of concussions and wanting to make sure this guy is healthy, because obviously this is a dude that you can build your company around. Would you have him just, you know, would you shoot an injury angle and just have him disappear for a few months? Or what, you know, how would you keep Daniel Bryan, you know, front and center and on the front burner if he can't actively compete?
No, I think they have enough time that they don't need to shoot an angle. I think they've already, I haven't watched Raw yet, it's on now, but they did acknowledge the concussion online. So I'm sure they'll mention it on TV tonight, say, hey, if he's not on TV, then they'll say, hey, you know, Bryan suffered concussion last week on Raw, blah, 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 blah. But we're only talking about January 20th. There's enough time. He could even set out until after the Elimination Chamber, and that would still buy him a full month before WrestleMania. So
then just show up a month before Mania?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, they could always go that route. So I think they're still in a good spot where they don't have to be worried about messing up the WrestleMania plans or having to really sideline him for an extended period of time.
Well, what do you think would be the plans? Let's assume that he wasn't going to win the Royal Rumble. What do you think the plans were going to be with him? Because I think, you know, the match that makes the most sense would be him and Triple H. And obviously that's not going to happen with Punk, you know, being involved with Triple H now. Or a rematch with him and Cena and him finally getting, you know, that win and giving him the ball to run with it.
Yeah, I think it depends on what happens with the title on Sunday. I have no idea what they're going to do with the title in terms of, are they sticking with Orton and doing possibly Orton-Bautista at Mania, or giving it to Cena and then maybe doing the Cena-Bryan route. So, assuming Cena wins, I'll say they go Daniel Bryan. If Orton wins, here's the other thing, too. I don't know how long Batista's going to be a face, so it's just a matter of time. Whenever they want to pull that trigger, they can pull it. If they don't pull it tonight, which wouldn't surprise me. So
I mean, we saw how quickly the New Age Outlaws, how quickly that thing lasted.
Yeah. By the way, why are they wrestling again? When did this happen? I mean, I know what had happened, but I'm just, they're on the pre-show for God's sake. It's like, this is the thing now, right? Why?
They're wrestling because they, look, it helps to have friends in high places.
Yeah, I mean, they're still better than probably half the tag teams around, but it's just kind of odd that they pop back up. But
like, you know, the primetime players got to be mad. Like, these 60-year-old men, 50, 60-year-old men, I don't know how old the Outlaws are.
Oh, I think they're both under 50.
Okay, so let's say 45. These 45-year-old men are coming in and taking your spot.
Billy Gunn, oh, geez, Billy Gunn is 50. Wow.
Okay. And Road Dogg's got to be at 45 at least.
44.
Okay. Yeah. So not spring chickens here.
No. Yeah, that's not a good feeling, but hey, you know, that's what happens when you're not part of that Attitude Era run. You're sort of put on the back burner WrestleMania time. And I'm sure they'll be around until Mania and involved in whatever happens with Triple H. So. Back to Orton, Daniel Bryan. That's a good question. What about assuming Orton wins, what about having Daniel Bryan paired up with Hulk Hogan somehow?
That's really interesting. Like, because I fully believe Orton's going to retain, because it just makes sense for the story. To have Orton retain the belt, but that'd be a really interesting way to bring Hulk Hogan back, and it'd be an interesting way, you know, where you could have Hulk involved but not risk his health in the ring.
Yeah, and I, the problem is I don't know who would Brian go against, and then therefore who would be in the opponent's corner. Like if it was Piper's, like say if it's Piper, I don't know who Piper would get behind to go against Brian. So, but yeah, I mean, I think they want to capitalize off this Daniel Bryan momentum, and for an arena like the Superdome that gets pretty loud, I think they're going to want that moment where they have 75,000 fans doing the yes chant at some point. Whether it's close and short or not, that's one thing, but at some point in the night, they're going to have that chant, and it's going to happen, so it's just a matter of how they get there.
Honestly, that's the only closing that makes sense to me, and it's the only closing in terms of Daniel Bryan. They've kind of jerked this guy around for the better part of a year and a half in terms of, you know, the start and stop push and the different storylines that he's been in, and some have worked, some haven't. It's like, the you know, you can only hold back a guy that the fans are behind for so long. And the cool thing about Bryan is, you know, even more so than a guy like CM Punk, of course Bryan's got the hardcore fans, but they did an excellent job of, you know, through the stuff with Kane. The kids love Daniel Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you've got that Cena crowd that likes Bryan, and you've also got the hardcores that like Bryan. You know, this should be the perfect guy for you to build around, but for whatever reason, you know, I won't say they've been reluctant, but they've kind of been wishy-washy in terms of pulling the trigger on them.
No, and I think Monday was a step in the right direction, and then the concussion happened. So that's not his fault, but I think that was a good step in saying, hey, all right, maybe it's time to start focusing in on what we want to do with this guy, because they need to somehow capitalize off this momentum, because you can't bank on this being around next year. You can't say, oh, well, let's just put him off for a year and hope that he's still this hot. You don't never know what's going to happen.
Especially if he was a heel that whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm very curious to see what they do with him, and I think we'll learn a lot after the Rumble this week.
Speaking of the Rumble, you mentioned Batista. A lot of people have been picking him as the guy to win the 30-man over-the-top rope Royal Rumble. Is that your pick?
That is my pick, but I'm prefacing this by saying I haven't seen Raw yet, so I'm gonna assuming that he doesn't do something silly on Raw and flip, I'm going to have Batista winning.
Yeah, I'm saying Orton retains, so I think Batista... I mean, that's really kind of, because so after Rumble, it's the Elimination Chamber?
Yeah, and who knows what they do with that. And
yeah, so they can throw a bunch of people in there. So, yeah, I'll go with Orton and Batista. Yeah, I think Batista's going to win the Rumble, even though I'm not 100% confident with that, but it makes the most sense. Even if Cena retained, you know, Batista Cena, you know, you can get money off of that for a bit.
Yeah, if Cena wins, then,
because to me, Bryan would be the guy, but if he's not going to be involved, you know.
Yeah. And there's probably not a way to backdoor him into a title match through the Elimination Chamber, assuming they just make the chamber a straight title match. So, and I think that's where we're heading. I think Orton's going to win. We'll have the chamber match. Cena will be somehow involved in a chamber match, and, Orton will retain his title and head on to Mania. So, yeah, if Cena wins, I'm going to say still Batista, never go that route, that history.
Yeah, not exciting. We're picking chalk, but yeah, I agree. So there is one new man that may be coming to the WWE soon, and that is he might not be in the Rumble, Marcus, but he may be in the rafters.
I think this is going to finally happen. My only fear, we're talking about Sting people, my only fear is that his contract might prevent him from coming into the company right away. If Vince Carter was smart, he would have had a 90-day non-compete within that contract. So that's the one thing I don't know, and I haven't seen anything reported about. So assuming there's no 90-day non-compete clause, oh, I think it happens for sure. If there is a 90-day compete clause, then they're pretty screwed, because
Because Brock and Taker was the match that a lot of people have been, you know, kind of hinting at. Do you think if Brock and Taker was the plan, they'd throw that out to go with Sting and Taker if he's available?
That's a good question because I think we want to see Sting Taker, I think it'd be hard to tell that story the right way in a span of 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
For it to make sense that there's this guy, because they don't acknowledge TNA, so here's this guy who was in WCW who we really
haven't... And the current audience doesn't really, connect with WCW either.
Yeah, so you have the TNA factor in terms of, you got to assume kids probably aren't watching TNA. It's mostly adults. You have to factor in that kids probably haven't seen WCW, so they don't know Sting. So there's a lot of holes they need to close if they want to make that Taker match happen. So I think they might stick with the plan and maybe shoot for Sting Taker at even a bigger arena next year in Levi Stadium.
Yeah, because to me, that, like, I spoke with Wei Ting about it last Friday on Review and Impact. And we're like, that match I think makes sense. But if you're already gearing up towards Brock and Taker, and, that's the plan, I think you wait. You hold off. And a way they could do it is, at the end of the Brock-Taker match, Taker ends up winning, streak is still alive, and then the camera pans up and you see Sting.
No, they wouldn't. They would save it for Raw. They wouldn't do that. They wouldn't shoot their load in all one night because
there's
always something that happens the night after Mania. Last year it was Ziggler. Year before it was Lesnar. So I think they would hold that off until the night after and sort of start the long term building towards WrestleMania 31.
Yeah, and you could do that. And then just I think that the other thing was, what would Sting be doing? I'm like, Sting could just be getting in shape. He'll show up. Kind of like remember with Rock and Cena where Rock wouldn't be there every week, but it'd be like, once a month we get our taste of the Rock.
Yeah, that was 3 years ago. I mean, that was a great surprise to have that main event announced the night after Mania, and you had the whole year to anticipate it, especially considering Taker is usually one and done. So you can send Taker off and introduce Sting, and if Sting doesn't show – look, if Sting doesn't show up on WrestleMania – automatically, you're going to have people assuming that he's going to show up at Raw. So you have that buzz that entire day and entire night hoping for something. So, yeah.
And it's also a good way to pimp the network because, you could say, you want to learn about this guy, we've got the best of Nitro coming up this week.
Yeah. I think he wouldn't make an appearance until that network launch because they're going to need to use the network as a tool to educate people about who is this man. And where has he been? Minus the TNA run, so.
So yeah, I mean, there's money to be made with this. Like, it's just a matter of, we've seen sometimes with this, they've done an excellent job, and sometimes they've dropped the ball. So I think with something like this, though, especially with Hunter having the respect that he does for Sting, there's money to be made with this, and if they do it right, both the WWE and Sting can benefit from this.
Now, the real question, though. Do we get a Starrcade rematch?
You mean a Bound for Glory 2011?
No. That didn't happen. Remember? Talking WWE. Shit, I forgot about that match. We just had that match. Never mind.
I don't want to...
All right. At least one awkward hallway segment interview between the two of them.
Now, that would be good. That would be funny. Yeah. And Hogan just happens to be wearing a black shirt that day.
Yeah. what are you doing here? What are you doing here?
And then Ric Flair shows up. Hey!
The
gang's
all
here. And scene. Speaking of former employers, we're going to end off the ringside wrap this week with a little bit of TNA talk. So Marcus and I both think Sting is on the way out, but... there were two new arrivals this week and maybe more to come. The Un-American Wolves or the Non-American Wolves or the Just Plain Wolves. Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards showed up on Genesis this past week and had a thrilling match or a boring backstage segment, depending on your opinion of it.
No, it was pretty boring backstage. It was not much of a match going on.
No, no. They matched wits with Dixie Carter.
There you go. Impact let me down, by the way. I told you this story, but I'll tell the listeners. I got to Indy and checked the hotel dial, no Spike TV. And I was like, oh, kind of bummed. Live Impact, I would have watched it. I downloaded Impact, had my computer on all night trying to download this stupid thing. Get up Friday morning, go down to the hotel lobby to watch Impact. This show sucked. I was so mad I wasted my bandwidth trying to download this stupid thing.
So did you know that it was a... Because the big problem I had with the show was the bait and switch, where this week was supposed to be Genesis, you know, the pay-per-view on TV, and most of the matches that were promised were delayed until the second week of Genesis, which I don't think was announced until that night on the show. So did you have any idea about that?
I knew about the bait... Well, I knew about the two-week special. I saw it online, but I didn't expect them to do the whole bait and switch thing. I just thought they would stretch it out and have it under this whole Genesis banner. But yeah, I mean, what do we get that was advertised on that card? We got...
I think Sting and EC3 was about it.
That was it. And that was a five-minute... I mean, it wasn't much of a match.
Yeah.
More of a screw job than anything, so...
And, the Huntsville screw job.
Yeah. And then next week, it sounds like we're getting another screw job in terms of the Wolves, who they made it sound like they were going to wrestle next week. They're not wrestling people. They're not wrestling next week.
They're not wrestling.
Yeah. So it's like, well, you spent this whole time on Twitter trying to build up the secret surprise, and you made it seem like you implied to the fans that the Wolves are coming in to wrestle. Two shows, no matches. What's going on?
Yeah, and first of all, it's like it's such a simple thing. Like the matches that they have for next week and the stuff that they did last, like if you combined it, you probably could have had at least a good show. Not saying it would have been a great show, but if you're giving me Angle and Rude, Sabin and Aries, Sting and Magnus, you know, and the Knockout Championship, like that would have been a decent 2-hour show.
Yeah.
But what we got was a 30-minute opening segment. We're talking.
And that's where the show went wrong, because that's a quarter of your show gone off the top for what?
And this is like the first for most of the pay-per-views on television, they've been primarily action. Like I remember I was at No Surrender in Norfolk, and there wasn't a lot of segments. You know, we had about 2 or 3 Ace and Eights and Main Event Mafia segments, but that was over the course of 2 tangents. But this show, there was so much talking, and, you know, Sting still cut a good promo, but I don't need to hear Sting talk, and then Dixie talk, and then EC3 talk, and then Samoa Joe
commercial break.
Commercial break. Yeah, so it was like way too much filler for a show that is supposed to be different than your average show.
And then the 12-man tag.
Yeah, with 2 women in it.
Yeah. So. But that was still better than the Samuel Shaw segment, so.
Who uses a shoe? I mean, really?
I had no idea that was Sam Diamond. I didn't know who that was. And I was confused watching. I was like, who is this guy in the back? And why is he attacking?
Yeah, it would at least make some sense, like if Al Snow or D'Lo Brown got beat up. Yeah. Like, okay, I recognize those guys, but
they've introduced them.
Yeah, like I used to watch ECW all the time, and it took me a second, like, oh, that's Simon Diamond. Yeah. So the Wolves are here. We'll figure out whether they wrestle or not. The big UK tour is about to pop off, but there is another piece of information that's kind of floating out there. Still speculation at this point, but Dave Meltzer with the Wrestling Observer has said that TNA has been in talks with MVP, former WWE superstar, former New Japan star. I think that would be a hell of a signing. Granted, it all depends upon what they would do with this character once he got there. But just off the top, just your initial impression, if MVP were to go to TNA, do you think that'd be a good move for him and a good move for the company?
I think it would be good for the company. Anyone at this point they can get would be good. Good move for MVP. It couldn't hurt. you know, he's been off U.S. television for a long time now, so any reintroduction to the audience out here would be good for him. I'm just worried about, like, the long-term history of this company in terms of, like, we don't know what's going on after March in terms of where they're shooting their shows. So, I mean, that the little stuff like that would concern me if I'm MVP, but, you know, I'm sure if, God forbid, if something happened where the company ended up folding or doing hiatus, he'd have break his contract and get out. So, there's not much of a risk on his end. So, it'd be a good fit for both sides. And I guess I can confirm that there have been talks, because I knew about this a while ago from people I know who know MVP. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me that it would happen, and just a matter of when at this point.
Yeah, and I think it'd be a great move. I think, you know, he's a guy that, much like Elijah Burke, when Elijah Burke first came in, you know, they did a great job with the Pope early on. It wasn't until after he got injured, I think, and then came back from injury that they didn't know what the hell to do with the guy. But I think of a guy like MVP, who, if I'm not mistaken, he owns the name still.
Yes, he does.
And owns the character and all that stuff. Yeah, like, he's a guy with a ready-made character. It may take a second for, you know, I think anybody watching TNA knows who the hell MVP is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so he's going to come in. He's going to be a big star. I think you can do a lot with the guy. It's just a matter of booking and front office. Like, will front office have a place for this guy to continue to work 6 months down the road from now? And will the bookers put him in a position to be a star? Because I think he's a guy that could be a guy you build a company around, especially, you know, we talk all the time about having a black superstar and who's going to be a black guy that you could build a company around. And MVP is one of those type of guys.
Yeah. And speaking of rumors, I told you guys this, but so I was part of this fellowship weekend over on Saturday, and part of our assignment during the weekend was to give a 15-minute speech. And I decided to talk about the WWE and UFC networks and sort of compare and contrast them in terms of trying to provide, it was only an audience of five people, so just trying to provide them just a detailed look at, or a brief look of what the networks are providing for users and how they could impact the whole sports realm in terms of digital rights and stuff. So after I did this speech, one of the other fellows in the room goes, so where's the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony this year? And I go, oh, it's in New Orleans. And she was like, oh, good, I needed to know that. And I was like, why? And she said, one of the residents in my community, she works at a paper in the Atlanta, Georgia area. And she said, one of the residents in my community is getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. And I was like, what? I was like, who? And she goes, oh, Rich Steiner. No, she goes, Rich Steiner. I was like, oh, Rich Steiner. I guess Rich had just gone on and he's run for office of some sort. Let me look it up real quick.
Wow.
I was like,
I would hate to be in that debate.
I was like, you just broke some news right here, if this actually happens to be true. Let's see.
It makes sense, you know, in New Orleans, WCW kind of territory, you know, to bring, you know, the Rick, and I'm assuming if Rick goes in, Scott's got to be.
Oh, got it. Scott was a bigger star than Rick.
So he comes from a highly educated university.
Mm-hmm. Kayfabe, Michigan.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, if you get the Warrior and Scott Steiner giving Hall of Fame speeches, I think that might be worth more the price for admission than WrestleMania.
Oh, wait. Rick actually went to Michigan? Hold on. Wait. Wow, he went to Michigan.
Yeah, well, wrestling wouldn't lie. That's why they were in the varsity club.
Wait, did Scott go to Michigan? Hold on now. Scott doesn't seem too
bright. Dark face gremlin Rick Steiner. So did he run for Congress or
what? They both went to Michigan. I'm shocked. Let's see here. It wasn't Congress. It was, I think, like maybe city council or something.
Congressman Steiner, do you have anything to say?
But yeah.
The chair recognizes the dog faced gremlin.
Yeah, so the Steiner brothers might be in the Hall of Fame, reportedly. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, they deserve it.
Yeah, they do. They do. And you mentioned Warrior. We haven't talked on that yet, but yeah, Warrior's going in. I know you're happy.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't even going to really bring it up, Marcus, but yeah, this is a great day. Not only is the Warrior going into the Hall of Fame, but there's a Warrior DVD in the works, which will counteract the vicious lies and rumors.
We've already had the DVD. What's wrong with the first one?
I think they should put them in a combo pack, like the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior, the salvation of the Ultimate Warrior, whatever this new one's going to be called.
It's pretty accurate to me.
Be like, here's what Vince said when he hated Warrior. Here's what Vince said when he was friends with Warrior. The truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, Warrior's in the Hall of Fame and maybe the Steiner Brothers as well. So, yeah, that'll be a hot ticket in Orleans. But you know what's going to be a hot ticket for all the listeners out there? It's Second Four, like it is each and every week on this MLK edition of the Kings of Sport. I hope everybody had a wonderful day. If you had to work, sorry about your luck.
I had to work.
Oh, sorry about your luck, Marcus. If you had the day off like me, hopefully you had some time to reflect. And we're going to have some fun. And I'm sure we're just going to have positive stories in Segment 4, right, Marcus, about black unity and no ratchetness, not today?
That's what Martin would want, right?
That's what Martin would want. So we'll see if that's what we get. So stick and stay. We got a place to be nation. We're on placetobenation.com, and we're gonna go to break with if you like our show, there's a bunch of great shows on the network, so take a listen. Here's a break, and after that we'll be back with the one and only Segment 4.
That all men are created equal. I have a dream.
And to take a nation of millions to hold us back. Brown versus poor, open some doors. Back then, they call all blacks Negroes. We kick it off the top, sort of like Cerebro. Separate is an equal when they practice. My school is a shack, mine is a path. Do I have to sit in the back of the bus? That's swagness. Second class citizen on account of my blackness. They say they changed the world, you gotta take a stand. Rosa Parks took a seat, changed the face of the land. Martin had a plan, that even if you wanna change the world, that it mean you gotta kill another man. Inspired by the people like the Rohingya Gandhi. A pacifist in the war without an army, cause they can't harm me no matter how the end seems. I wonder if Mr. King is still having dreams.
I have a dream.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
What's that?
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. The Titans are wrestling. Oh.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course, PlaceToBeNation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. Place to Be Nation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack to the Cowboys call, we have the best and comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. Want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also, our friend Dave at TWFNews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also, check out PileDriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at RSPWFAQ.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
When we allow freedom ring, we will be able to speed up that day when all the soft children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last. Free at last! Thank God Almighty! We are free at last!
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport on this MLK edition of the show. And we gotta end it the way Dr. King would want, by talking about ignorant people. And we have no shortage of ratchetness here in segment four this week.
Too many stories.
Like, if had I known we had all this stuff that we missed in the past couple of weeks, like, I would have foregone the football talk, because this is honestly more interesting. We got some Kanye, of course, to come. We got world peace in the news, and not the good kind of world peace. We got some hockey stories. We got buck naked portraits being taken. But Marcus, you brought a story to my attention. You didn't even bring me the story. You just gave me the premise, and so I'm waiting to hear what's going on with the soldier, Kellen Winslow.
Yes, I'm so glad he hasn't heard about the story. All right. Reading this from TMZ, folks. New York Jets tight end Kellen Winslow Jr. was masturbating in a Target parking lot with two jars of Vaseline in his car. This, according to a police report obtained by TMZ Sports.
Does Kellen not listen to the show?
Hey.
Did he not hear what happened with Trey Meteor?
He must have missed that episode. He was busy. The 30-year-old former pro bowler was arrested on November 19th.
Grown-ass man.
After cops in New Jersey received a tip about a man in a Target parking lot, quote-unquote, pleasuring himself in his vehicle. According to the report, a 58-year-old white lady had pulled up next to Kellen's Cadillac Escalade around 5:30 p.m. and noticed Kellen sitting in the driver's seat with the window open. The woman said she tried to make small talk about the weather, and that when she saw his erect penis, called the cops. When cops arrived to the scene, they reportedly found two open containers of Vaseline in the car, along with synthetic marijuana labeled Mr. Happy, and Kellen admitted he smoked the stuff to help him relapse. Cops asked Kellen what he was doing in the parking lot, and he said he was looking for a Boston market but got lost. Cops note that Kay's penis was not exposed when they arrived.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack here. Literally.
Yeah, bad term. Bad choice of words.
Pause. Okay, so first of all, my man was in the Escalade.
Mm-hmm.
You said it was a Target parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kellen Winslow, first of all, Kellen Winslow, I know Kellen Winslow don't shop at no Target.
Well, at Boston Market, he was lost. He only ended up at Target because he was looking for the Boston Market.
So was Boston Market his intended place to masturbate, or could he just not wait any longer?
Maybe he couldn't wait any longer.
Man, I got these two jars of Vaseline, man, intensive care. I'm a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was when the police came, obviously, I guess he didn't see the lady.
Why
was he still there? Like, why didn't he just jet off the lady's song?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, here's the thing. If the woman saw Kellen, maybe he wasn't thinking that she would call the cops. Maybe she just saw it, didn't really overreact, and just called the cops and went inside. And
you thought she was going to join him?
Hey, I mean,
I got two jaws, girl. Let's get it's a party. Wow. Like, this is worse than Trey Meteor for some. Like, first of all, this is a professional athlete, and he's 30 years old, like you mentioned. He's a grown man.
Mm-hmm.
You got the money to get an Escalade. You got the money to take expensive trips to Boston Market. Why don't you just stay at your house, man? Behind closed doors.
Two jars of Vaseline?
Oh, yeah. So this is what is he with the Jets now, right?
Yeah, but it was a 1-year deal, so he was with the Jets.
I wonder who's going to pick him up.
Mm. Yeah, so Kellen Winslow, everybody. Who knew you had the urge to pull it out at 5:30? It's beyond me.
That's how you want to start your year off, Kellen.
Yeah, well, no, what it happened, this arrest happened in November, but now the details are finally coming out.
Okay, see, I thought this is like in the middle of winter. He just hit the parking lot.
Oh, no. Well, in November, it was probably still not pleasant weather for...
That's why I needed two jars.
Yeah.
You don't want to get chapped when you... I mean, you don't want to get chapped. If you don't do it, you may as well take all the precautions.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah. I was not like Marcus said, I hadn't heard that story. So yeah, this is gonna be a good segment for y'all. So let's stick with the theme of naked football players, or at least football players with their pants down, and let's go to the curious tale of Devon Bess. And what's he been up to in the new year, brother Marcus?
Yeah, Devon Bess has had quite the week. He got arrested Friday morning at Fort Lauderdale International Airport for allegedly assaulting an officer. There was people in the airport reported that Bess was strange behavior going on. He was dancing and singing, and his pants were falling down. At that point, an officer approached Devon Bess, and he squeezed his cup of coffee in order to spill the liquid on the officer, and then proceeded to take a fighting stance and take off his shirt. He was arrested and he posted bond. I think the bail was posted $100 bond and was released from jail early Friday morning. That's nothing, folks. $100. Here you go.
for putting a fighting stance on a cop. That's chump change.
Yeah. Very interesting. But, the day before he, on his, Twitter account, he tweeted out a photo of a substance that looked like marijuana, which was eventually deleted. And then on Saturday, Bess sent out an Instagram of himself standing in the mirror butt-ass naked. So I'm not sure what exactly is going on. He reportedly had some serious family issues that were going on. So I'm not sure if it's related to that or if this is a situation where he's got some mental health issues that he needs to deal with. But this is three incidents now in the same week that it's just something doesn't seem right, and he probably needs to get help soon.
Yeah, back in December, you know, he's with Cleveland now. Cleveland put him on the reserve non-football illness list, you know, mm-hmm. with a personal matter. So it seems like something that at least has been going on for at least the past month or so, probably longer than that, though.
Yeah.
And, like, at first when you're like, he had his pants down and he was singing, I'm like, okay, you know, sometimes people have a little too much to drink. And did you see Dreamgirls?
No.
You gotta step your movie game up, Marcus. But there's a famous scene in the movie. I don't know if it was in the play because I never saw the play. But Eddie Murphy.
You gotta step your play game up.
Yeah, I gotta step my play game up. I ain't seen the play since Les Mis back in 2000.
Mm.
Yeah, so I gotta step my play game up. But let me go online after the show and get tickets to the Book of Mormon. But there's a scene with Jimmy Thunder Ely, and that's Eddie Murphy's character, and he's at this concert, and he is mad that the record company won't let him be the singer he wants to be, so he drops his pants and does a rap. You know, and this is set back in, like, the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. so everybody was shocked. So that, like, I'm like, okay, maybe, you know, Brother Bess is doing his James Thunder Ely impression on the plane, and everybody's having a good time, and ha-ha-ha, I'm dragging my pants down. But no, then when the cop shows up, and he wants to take his shirt off and turn to Hollywood Coleman and start fighting, then that's a whole other matter altogether.
Yeah, it's something's up, and hopefully the lead will step in here, or if not the lead, then at least his team, the Browns, will.
Yeah, I'll say the best case scenario is like this is something that he can get a handle of and talk to somebody and, you know, resume his career and you know, we'll look back in 5 years and be like, man, remember that 2 weeks when Devon Best went crazy? But, you know, I'm hoping it doesn't turn to something more serious because we've seen, you know, with football players and mental health issues and, you know, head injury issues and things of that nature. Like, it doesn't always turn out with a happy ending.
Yeah. Bad choice of word for the segment.
Hey, if you got two jars of Vaseline, it'll be extremely happy. Oh man, so yeah, let's leave the football players and let's go to the ice. We haven't done an Ask a Hockey Negro in a while, so I hear you got some hockey ratchetness for us, Marcus.
I do. John Tortorella, the infamous, brash, loudmouth. Sound familiar, folks? Coach of the Vancouver Canucks was...
Like when you think of hockey ratchetness, you think of Tortorella.
You think of Torts, yeah. He was suspended without pay for 15 days after a massive brawl that happened on Saturday between Vancouver and Calgary. If you haven't seen this fight yet, you should probably go back and watch because it was pretty deliberate. Game started 2 seconds in. The gloves dropped and it was on. And what Calgary was the instigator because Calgary, if you're not a hockey buff, so there's 4 different lines in hockey. Usually the fourth shift is all of your enforcers and bruisers and guys you went in there to get tough and dirty and fight. So Calgary started the game with their fourth line on the ice. And Tortorella noticed this and didn't want to risk putting his star players, like the Sedin Twins out there, so he decided to counter with his fourth line. And as soon as the game started, the fight broke out. I think all 4 guys were fighting. I'm not sure if... I said all 5 guys. All 5 guys. I'm not sure if the goalie got involved or not, but the incident that got Tortorella in trouble was after the fight got resolved and settled and players had ejected. During the first intermission, Tortorella tried to get into the Calgary locker room, and it was pretty much 1 against 20 at this point because you had all the guys from the Calgary bench heading into the locker room, and Tortorella was going the opposite direction, trying to get into to confront the Calgary head coach. So this is not the first time Torts has been in trouble with the league. He's sort of the bad boy of NHL coaches. I guess Patrick Roy a close second now for what he did opening night. So. It's pretty rare, though, that you see a coach banned pretty much for 15 days. He can't have any contact with the team. The suspension will run through February 2nd, so he's going to be gone for a bit. Did you see the fight yet or no?
Yeah, I saw him fight. I think it was on PTI. I happened to catch the clip. And, you know, the thing that Wilbon was saying, you know, Mike Wilbon is like, he hates the hockey goonery.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got both teams with their goon squad out. And, you know, apparently it was like one kid's first night in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, this is why hockey gets a black eye, no pun intended, because of stuff like this. And, you know, I know fighting is a part of the game, and, you know, the hockey purists will be like, this is what it's all about. But we've seen, you know, especially with Olympic hockey, that, you know, hockey can be a beautiful thing and an engaging sport and fast-paced, and you get lots of offense, you know, without all the fighting and the slowing down. And that, to me, would be a more appealing product, especially if you're trying to broaden the sport to an American fan base that is used to football and basketball and sports like that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, if you're not a big hockey person, make sure you check out the Olympics in a couple of weeks, because that's the best of the best. And you can tell the difference right away between Olympic hockey and NHL hockey, just how smooth the game is and how quick the game is. And in a situation like this, I'm not sure off the top of my head the whole backstory between Calgary and Vancouver, but the Flames head coach Bob Hartley was pretty much calling his bluff. He said, "Hey, look, I'm putting these guys out there. I dare you to put your stars out there." And he was only fined $25,000, and he was fined for instigating the fight. Wasn't fined for anything else. So, Torts, sorry, brother. Your team lost 9-1 earlier in the week to Anaheim, and now this. So,
not a good week. Question for me is, do we see Torch show up with the fake mustache like Bobby V did with the Mets back in the day? Like, I'm James Shortarelli.
No, I don't think he would risk it. He's not that dumb.
No, he crazy, but he ain't that crazy.
Yeah.
He's not get banned from the league crazy.
No.
And like all this fighting and fussing and stuff, man, I think we need some world peace right now in segment four, Marcus.
Some meta world peace?
Yeah, I guess we can go with some meta world peace. And apparently he is the one that is standing up for the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and got into it with another, I would say formerly prominent black athlete. And go ahead and let the people know what went down with Brother Peace.
Yeah, this is also on TMZ. Meta World Peace decided to go after Larry Holmes, of all people.
Larry Holmes!
Because, you know, Larry Holmes is so dangerous and
he's such
a public figure these days, yeah.
Yeah.
So TMZ saying Meta's beef stems from Holmes' recent public criticism of Floyd Mayweather, when he told Sky Sports ringside that Mayweather is, quote, crazy and will irresponsibly blow through his entire multi-million dollar fortune, just like he did. Let's just pause right here. Floyd Mayweather has probably made, I'm going to say, at least 20 times more than Larry Holmes has made ever in his career. So we'll just leave it at that. After reading Larry's quotes, Meta blasted the guy on Twitter saying, "Larry Holmes should never call out another product of slave in public." Sure. Peace explained that Larry should be supportive of Floyd because our community was not fortunate to have finance-savvy parents. Quote, "With that said, instead of guys like Larry Holmes bringing down, he should uplift the ghettos." Meta continued, "People like Larry should be retrieving lost and burnt black history in black history books, rather than bringing down black legends." And he concluded by saying, "Support and love is better than hate. Loving your neighbor is better than war." Written by Meta the Hood Hippie.
where do you start with that, Marcus? Like, Rob Test / Meta World Peace is like, he's either crazy or brilliant or brilliantly crazy.
I'm going to say he's, I don't want to call him crazy. He's,
you don't want those problems.
No, he's a strong dude. He's, he's working on some things. and sometimes, and he reminds me very, very much of Mike Tyson.
I was just gonna say that, like, yeah, very Tyson-esque.
Yes, they remind me of a lot of each other. So, he's very Tyson-esque. He's very prolific and sometimes very thoughtful and sensitive. And this is one of those incidents where he took great offense for some reason. I don't know how tight he is with Floyd, but it was just kind of odd that he decided to defend Floyd and go after Larry Holmes of all people.
Yeah, Larry's comments, they didn't seem like that bad. He wasn't taking a personal attack, it didn't seem, at Floyd.
No, and I mean, it's something that people have said in the past about any athlete, not just Floyd in particular, but I really don't think Floyd is in any danger of blowing through his cash. I think people, sort of like, going back to the whole Richard Sherman thing, he's putting on an act. The Richard Sherman thing last night, that's an act. That's not Richard Sherman. The Floyd Mayweather that you see on 24/7, that's an act. That's not the real Floyd Mayweather. And I think he's got enough people within his camp to properly manage his money. And he's seen enough. He's such a historian of the sport itself that he's seen the Tysons. He's seen the Larry Holmes. He's seen the George Foremans, that Evander Holyfield. He's seen those guys, and he knows that he needs to properly save in order to prevent himself from falling into that trap.
Yeah, I think out of all the current superstars, Floyd is the least likely, to go broke. So, but the other thing about Metal World Peace is that you're right. He just is this enigma of a person. Like, he could say something outlandish, but at the same time, you could tell he's a very thoughtful, deep individual when he lets that side out. He's also a funny dude, and he can laugh at himself. If you ever seen what he does on Key and Peele, mm-hmm. with the Metal World News, it's like if he was a guy that was crazy or had this selfish opinion, he wouldn't put himself out there like that.
Yeah, and with Meta, that's not an act. What you see is what you get with Metal World Peace. There's no on switch, off switch. It's sort of like halfway stuck in the middle, so you're not sure which direction it's going. So,
and he is too sexy for his cat.
Yes, he is.
So, but the good thing about Meta is, he might fight, as we saw in the brawl, the Malice at the Palace a while back, but I don't think he would ever punch no little kid in the face. And that's where we're going to end off segment four. Oh, that little kid, punch a teenager.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah. He's a grown man.
Yeah. Legally, he's a grown man now. So, for those of you out there playing the Kings of Sport drinking game, get ready to take a shot of rum. For those of you that the Kings of Sport office pool that had the over-under in terms of when we were going to talk about Kanye West again. It is officially 3 weeks in to the new year, and Brother Kanye is back.
And in this instance, I am on Kanye's side.
Team Yeezy.
You've probably seen the story by now, but Kanye West allegedly assaulted and beat up an 18-year-old kid who was harassing his wife, Kim Kardashian, and called Kim a knitter lover as she was on her way to a doctor's appointment. And Kim decided to call Kanye, who showed up, and they tracked down the kid, and Kanye gave him the business.
He gave him that Scottie Pippen treatment.
According to an eyewitness, Kanye pummeled the guy with more than 30 blows. And I guess the receptionist was trying to tell Kanye to stop, but all the kid could do was, the kid just did what I would do, turn into a ball, just take it, just try to block and take.
Every time he's getting hit, he's like, that's 1 million, that's 2 million.
Yep, mm-hmm. He wasn't arrested for this somehow, which means there probably wasn't any video. And it's been sort of quiet on the story. This happened last week, and I haven't heard much recently, so I'm not sure what exactly is going to happen. But the kid did threaten to file charges, of course, and I'm sure he will eventually, which will probably bring Kanye back to court, because I believe he's on probation of sorts for previous incidents with paparazzi.
I was just going to say, so, considering that, it wouldn't be that crazy for me to think that maybe Kanye gave that dude some money already.
I don't know. I mean, he doesn't seem like the type to just settle, especially when you're going after his wife. I don't know.
Yeah, but sometimes, like you said, I agree. I don't think Kanye was in the wrong, but by the same token, it's like you have to know who you are in comparison to whoever's being an idiot.
Yeah.
You have way much more to lose than this dude.
Do you think that Kim should have just ignored it and not called him?
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah, that's...
Knowing that her husband is a hothead.
Right, yes, ladies, you got to look out for your man. You can't set your man up in a situation like that. You know, like, this reminds me, and you probably never watched Mob Wives on VH1.
Nope.
But there was a incident where Renee, one of the Mob Wives, her husband was, he was on probation for, like, beating somebody up or something. Mm-hmm. And this guy at a bar was acting up and, you know, saying rude comments to her. And she was like, I'm going to call Junior on the phone. So she called Junior. And Junior got there, and the cameras is there, and Junior is ready to beat this guy down. And then right when Junior gets there, she remembers, this guy's on probation. And so the next 5 minutes of her trying to calm Junior down so he doesn't get sent back to jail. So it's like, in that situation, I understand that Kim was probably upset, and she was like, her first instinct is to call her man. But your man is a celebrity, just like you are, and your man is somebody that is always the center of controversy, like you are. And you know that he's, like you said, he's got a short fuse, and Sway can tell you that,
yeah.
You know, because you ain't got the answers, man. So I think she set him up in that situation, not on purpose, but you have to kind of take a breath and be the bigger person, especially when you have as much to lose as they do for some 18-year-old kid on the street. Like, come on. Like, he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, and he was yelling at first at the paparazzi, and that's when Kim stepped in and said, hey, you know, you shouldn't be using the N-word, and then that's when the guy decided to turn his attention towards Kim. So, I mean, I give Kim credit for trying to do the right thing there, but at the same time, you know.
She should have left it at that. She shouldn't have called. She should have told him about it at dinner that night.
Oh, funny, baby, you wouldn't believe what happened at the doctor's office today.
Yeah. Instead of calling him and then, you know, Kanye, I can't imagine Kanye like rolling up in the BMW. Get in the car, baby. Yeah. And they chasing this kid down the street.
Yeah. But cops are called, wasn't arrested. So we'll see what happens. But it's hard to.
At the minimum, he going to have to pay this dude a guap. At the minimum. And that's, you know what I'm saying, like we talked about the probation, there's a lot more things that could happen. So at the minimum, he's going to have to go in his pockets for this one.
This is why you need goons in your life. If you had a goon squad, you'd say, hey, yo, Tito, handle him. And just, that's what they're hired to do.
I'm sure you're going to call Beanie Siegel or somebody up and give him $1,000 to handle his light work.
Yeah, something. Don't call your
Craig man. Craig Mack ain't had a job in years.
Ooh, I forgot about Craig Mack.
You'll be asking the eyewitness, what happened? I don't know. All I know is he just said there was some flavor in your ear. And then a fist in your ear and a knee in your ear.
Yeah, some blood out of your ear.
Like if you're that big, you shouldn't be getting your hands dirty. Like, I'm not advocating, you know, goons, but they're there for a reason.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's already been an interesting new year for Kanye West, and a lot of ratchetness, Marcus. A lot of, you see, we take the week off and the world goes crazy. We didn't even talk about Justin Bieber and what's his homeboy, Lil Zai,
who got arrested twice in one day.
And he broke the police phone and at the police station. Like, this ain't a movie, dog. You can't act crazy. You're not a gangster.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
You're arrested for egging people's house and getting caught with Molly. You're not a gangster. Like, come on.
He in jail talking about pop the Molly. I'm sweating. The whole Arian Foster story with the woman who's pregnant. Yeah. Who wants to, yeah, as Arian's allegedly wants an abortion. And
I think one day, like, I wonder if April Fool's falls on like a Thursday. Like, we should just do an all ratchetness edition of the show.
We should. We got the Tito Ortiz arrest. DUI. What else did we miss? It's been a busy 2 weeks. Oh, Dennis Rodman doing the rehab for.
Yes, and then blaming, he's like the North Koreans tricked me with liquor.
Mm-hmm.
Which in my mind, like I'm picturing Kim Jong Un. He's like, Dennis, drink this. Dennis is like, what is this? This ain't no Kool-Aid, and it's like foaming, like frothing at the top and smoking. And he drinks it, and then next thing you know, you see him on TV getting into it, and Charles Smith having to be the voice of reason.
Yeah. Which reminds me, I gotta make sure we do the Charles Smith story.
Yeah, don't forget to hit up G-Watch.
I did. He confirmed, so we'll put the date.
All right. Yeah, we should do that. When's the All-Star break?
February 14th through 16th.
Yeah, we should run Austin because that way we can talk about the first half of the NBA season and preview the second half and then get into the Charles Smith beef.
Okay.
There you go. That's a plan. Yeah. See, we want to end the show on a positive note after all the ratchetness. It's like you got to cleanse your palate. So I think that's going
to
be.
We can also talk about Raw that week. I'm supposed to be doing the Raw with Alfred if I don't kill him before then. So
I was going to say, are you guys going to be able to squash your beef?
You might be on the dark match.
Oh, is that a racial thing?
It might be.
The dark skin match?
Uh-huh.
And on that note, happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day, everybody. It's been a fun week. I like when we get to some good discussions. So hopefully we'll have some more interesting topics to talk about next week. I'm sure we'll get into our big Super Bowl preview. We'll talk about the fallout from the Royal Rumble and whatever the hell Richard Sherman does next week, because you know he's going to do something. So, Marcus, where can the people follow you? Where can they catch up with your work? Where can they send you shout-outs and, maybe send you pictures on your Instagram and things of that nature.
All right, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at
Mark. Where can the podcast follow you on Instagram? What I'm really trying to say.
Where can you? Oh, jeez. Marco Will, MarcoWill.
And you can follow Big Nasty Albert Cunningham on Twitter at This Is Nasty. You can check him out on Bleacher Report and read the articles and, check out the video. You can follow me at N8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. You can also check out placetobenation.com for all the latest and greatest in your pop culture, sports, and gaming world. I have a TNA Impact review that's going to be starting this weekend, and I don't even have a name for it yet. I was thinking like Deep Impact, and like I was going to like do like a picture where I look like Morgan Freeman, like the president from a Deep Impact. That's a little bit too much work for TNA. So I'll come up with a name. If you have suggestions for my weekly Impact review, hit us up on Twitter on the Facebook page and let us know. And you can find us on Twitter at KOS_POD, Cospod on Twitter, as well Facebook.com/ The Kings of Sport. Check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, rate, review, share us with your friends. And that's going to do it for this week. For Marcus Vandenberg, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham, I am the Godfather Nate Filton. Hopefully all three of us will be back next week. But if not, you still been down with the kids.
Preacher preaching in a broken voice. Crickets creaking out the lonely noise. The sun is sinking cause it's got no choice. Just like my sinking heart. Ooh.
People watching through a veil of tears. Singing we shall overcome our fears. He was barely even 40 years. But I can hear him talking, hear him saying loud and clear.
Oh.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network. Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X.